My name is Ian O'Neill, and this is How They Did It, a podcast where we learn filmmaking from those who've gone before us. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to How They Did It, a podcast for indie filmmakers, especially those just starting out looking to make their very first film, although anyone at any level can listen and learn. Ian David Diaz is back on the show today. He was here about 6 months ago, but we're thrilled to have him back. He's a writer and director, a producer, an editor, casting director, cinematographer. He's done it all, folks. He's written, produced, and directed The Killing Zone, Bad Day, and now he's written and produced and directed a web series, a very popular, award-winning web series called Rebecca Gold, The Series. Ian David Diaz, you are back.
I'm back.
Oh, it's good to hear you.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously you've done really well. Rebecca Gold, the first season, is just like sucking up all the awards, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's doing well. It's just, I wish I had money instead of the awards, if you know what I mean, so... that's just a wish, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if you could take the award and trade it in and say, okay, I'll take some cash for that now.
Yeah,
that would be nice. Is that what you're trying to tell me now? Is that you may be struggling financially with the second season?
Look, I have money, but yeah. What I've written is I don't have enough money to do what right. I've written. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'll have to, if I can't, then I'll have to rewrite it and make it smaller. But as it stands now, it's a really good piece. You know, it's a really good, I think a lot of people will love it, basically. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, you at the end of the day, you have to compromise. And you know, if I have to compromise, I have to compromise, you know. You can't spend too much time worrying about things like this. The most important thing is that you make it. That's right. The most important.
That's absolutely, well, that's the thing, is that here you are, you've gone through season one, you're in season two, and, you know, there are people out there like myself who's talking about filmmaking and in the process of trying to get their films off the ground or web series or whatever they're trying to do, and they haven't done it. You're doing it. That's freaking awesome.
The thing is, anyone can do it, really. If they have a mobile phone or a cell phone, as you guys say, you know, you can make a web series. There's no two ways about it. You just got to be clever about it. You know, that's what you have to be, really.
You're not shooting on a cell phone, though.
No.
See, you're not. What are you shooting on?
For season two, we'll probably shoot 4K this time around.
Ooh.
I'll edit it 1080, but I'll shoot it 4K just in case it needs to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping, as I said, I've set money aside to do season two, but I don't really have enough money to do it
properly.
To do what the script says. Yeah.
Yeah. So you might have to compromise, but let's not get into that.
Exactly.
But are you going out looking for funding, or are you just funding this self-funding?
No, the way I see it is that it's my responsibility to find the money. So if it comes from me, it comes from me.
Right.
But I think my producer is going to throw money in. And I've spoken to my accountant, would you believe, about how to raise money. He suggested some really good suggestions, actually.
Really?
I asked him, I said, well, what about if they give me money and they claim it back on tax? And he said, well, you know, people won't do that. He said, what you can do is you can, because Rebecca is gay, you can appeal to the LGBTQ. Is it
right.
LGBTQ?
Yep.
Community. And you can write to them and they could extract it from the marketing. So you could ask them if they want to put some money in and then, you know, reclaim it through marketing, whether
right.
it be a club, whether it be a magazine, whether, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
He says that's, you know, a lot of people are going to say no, but you might get a few that'll say yes.
Yeah.
But that's probably the best way for them to justify giving out money if they like your project.
So what do you mean? You ask them to put money in and they recoup it from marketing. So marketing, what you're saying is the marketing of the film will help market them as well?
No. The marketing, like for instance, is a club. Say it's a gay club.
Yeah.
They'll give me some money and then they'll say that was for marketing.
Oh, right.
So you know what I mean? So for their club,
I see what you're saying.
This, which is advertising their club,
right?
Kind of thing. Instead of giving me money straight out and then trying to claim it via tax return, right? Because that doesn't really work,
right?
So he was saying that's probably my best bet. But the chances of those clubs saying yes to my project is it's not
slim.
Good.
It's pretty slim.
So, but you know, you can give it a shot.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because my film. Has got LGBTQ. It's based in LGBTQ. It's two gay women and a gay man, and it's about coming out. And so, with you saying something like that, I'm feverishly writing that advice down.
He's stealing from me. That's cool.
To clubs, you know. We both know how hard it is to raise funds. So, you know, if I get a little edge, I'm jumping on that edge.
I think what my accountant was saying was that the reason why he's just suggested that is because season one is already there.
Yeah.
So it's proof of concept.
That's
so they
right.
can, you know, they can look at that and then make a decision. I think it's slightly harder if you haven't done anything.
That's right. Oh, it's slightly harder.
Much harder.
it's harder, but it's worth it though. And you know, I think that it's a positive for those groups or as you say, clubs or whatever it happens to be. I think there's a positive there for them to be attached to your project or mine project. It's just it's bringing awareness, and that's really important. So it's a really good piece of advice. I think I'd jump on that myself. And so Rebecca Gold, the season one, I know you dismissed your awards, but you've nailed down a lot of awards for this show.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, I had, we know it's a good piece, right?
Yeah.
People instinctively know when they watch something that it's well made. Right. You know, it's like the analogy of, I remember I said this to somebody when I was a kid. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, when I was watching TV shows and movies and stuff like that, I could instinctively see things that people weren't seeing.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, there'd be like a soap on TV, EastEnders or something just like that. When I was a kid, I'd know that wasn't shot on film, but I couldn't explain why that looked so different to film.
Right.
But I knew it was different, right?
Right, me too.
But then if you look at your parents, the parents are like, they couldn't tell the difference between video or film.
Yeah.
Right? And and if you can see things like that, then you're well ahead of the curve. Do you know what I mean?
So
it's just things like that. I've lost my train of thought now. What was I going to say? Oh, dear.
Not sure. But it was about Rebecca Gold and winning all those awards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Lost my train of thought. Winning these awards, it's a good thing. But it doesn't help the plight of trying to, get contacts in the industry and stuff like that. Because everybody knows that if you're not in the circle, if you're not upper class, you know, or in a circle of money, it's very rare to find money and very rare for people to give you money to make a film or a web series or anything like that. I mean, that's just the basic facts of life. And I don't really see any ways around it. The only way I saw around it was to actually finance it myself. I just got fed up of asking people, fed up of getting rejected, and just got fed up full stop. So I came to the conclusion that the only thing that's stopping me from making stuff is money.
Yeah.
So once you kind of sort that out, then you could move forward, which is what I did.
And that's what you're doing with Rebecca Gold season two, right? Is that you're just moving forward on your own?
I'm moving forward, but now because I've got proof of
concept,
you know, Yeah, a proof of concept, and it's out there and people have seen it. There is a fan base. I was really surprised when I went to the New Jersey film festival. I did not know how many people had seen it. When I turned up the first day, people were just walking up to me, and they came up to me and they said, "Oh, so you exist then?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" They go, "We've seen you on Facebook. We didn't think you were real." And we're like, "Okay." You know, and then there's all these people going, "Where's Katie? Where's," because Katie couldn't come, right? Mm-hmm. She had wisdom tooth problems. Oh. And so, yeah, she had wisdom tooth. She couldn't come. Ooh. So they were like, "Where's Katie? Where's Katie?" And like all these people kept coming up to me. And I suddenly realized that more people had seen it than what it was saying on YouTube.
Really?
Do you know what I mean? So more people had seen, so it's out there. Wow. People know it exists. So that's the advantage I've got. So I think the last stop I do is do an Indiegogo campaign and see whether people still want to, go that way, really.
Yeah. Where are you in season two?
The script's you're almost script, done. I'm pretty happy with it.
You're almost finished with the scripts?
Script two is done.
Yeah.
Season two is done.
Yeah.
It just needs, we're going to do a read through soon, which is beginning of December. And I just need to know whether it works with the actors, and they can tell me where I'm going wrong, and you know, and just figure out generally if it works. So it's there. The script's done, and you know, a lot of the people, some people that's read it, they really like what they've read. I mean, it's far more engaging and far more adventurous than season one.
Right. So. Oh, far more adventurous. Wow.
Yes.
then, man, it's going to be really adventurous because season one was kind of, that kind of peaked too. There was some real...
This one's concentrating a lot on, I don't want to give too much away, but it's concentrating a lot on the relationship between Jackie and Rebecca.
Right.
Not so much that it takes away from the fun, which is... her shooting people. it doesn't take away from that fun. They're a bit, you know, like for instance, everybody's back, as I said.
Oh, beauty.
Like for instance, the guy that plays Zaid, Ben, he's got a bigger part in it and more important in this season two. Obviously Jackie's part is expanded and you'll get to know more about her.
Yep.
There are new characters in there as well.
Yeah.
There's a character called Edith Seven, who's part of the company that has no name.
It's the company.
Yes, it's called the company. But there's a joke behind that as well. But anyway, so, and there's lots of Easter eggs in there and silliness, and you know, Rebecca's gonna be Rebecca, she's not gonna change, and
that's good.
It's fun and it's emotional, and it still deals with her sexuality and her loneliness.
Yeah, you should just for people to refresh their memories, just in case they haven't seen the series. What exactly is Rebecca Gold? What's it about?
Season one is about an assassin who is really good at her job, and while she's doing her job, she accidentally bumps into her high school crush, and she ends up the whole of season two protecting her high school crush,
breaking
the rules, protect her. That's basically what season two is all about. And season two expands on that very thing. So
expands on their relationship as well.
Expands on the relationship. There is no because I'm not gay.
Yeah.
And nor is Katie.
Yeah.
And nor is anyone in the cast. We have to tread carefully.
Oh, absolutely.
We do. And we don't want to disrespect that community.
Yeah.
We don't. But I do feel that a lot of stuff that's come out recently has disrespected that community.
Like what?
And like for instance, they have a series on CW called Batwoman.
Oh yeah.
See that?
I have never watched it.
Right, but that's really insulting to the LGBTQ community. It really is. Yeah, it really is. I find, anyway.
I'll have to watch it and see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm not
going
to go into the ins and outs of it, but I think it's not good for that community because As I said, I don't think it was your. It might have been Chris. I did a podcast with Chris Healy.
Yeah.
Recently, and he asked me, well, you know, what does Rebecca go? Why is it important to the LGB community? And I said it isn't. Yeah. And I said because what I wanted to do was create a gay character that wasn't the focus.
Right.
It doesn't matter if Rebecca is gay or not.
Right.
She just happens to be gay.
Yeah.
Right. And it's pointless saying it every episode. Like, I don't know if you know Doctor Who. Do you know Doctor Who?
I've watched a few.
Okay, right. So they've changed the Doctor to a woman, which is not a bad thing, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But the scripts that they've done is really shit. Really, really bad. But there's a scene in it where they're talking to this guy and this guy walks up and he says, oh, yeah, I'm gay, my gay boyfriend, for no apparent reason.
Yeah, you have to have a reason. Right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you don't, as I said in my last podcast, right, if my brother, who happens to be black, was in a series, right, he's not going to say he's black in every episode, which is what these films and TV shows are doing, right?
Yeah.
The fact that he's black is neither here or there. What you want to do is you want to see him through his journey. You want to, you know, celebrate his ups and downs. You want to see where he's going, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what I want to do with Rebecca Gold. I want to champion that she's gay, but she's also awesome as well.
Right.
But not, you know, but being gay is normal.
Yeah, that's exactly. What I'm trying to say. Well, it's you're normal. Trying to normalize it.
Yeah, James Bond doesn't go around going, hey, I'm a heterosexual hero. He doesn't go around saying that all the time, does he?
It just and it's so funny.
That's who he is.
You know what? It's funny because characters don't show up on screen and say, hi, I'm heterosexual.
Exactly. My point.
You know?
So if you watch Batwoman, it either says it via words or demonstrates it. Every episode demonstrates it. It's like it's pounding you with that. And you're like, you don't need that. I just want to see Batwoman. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to see a good story, good performance. You know, I want to see where she's going, what she's doing. You know what I mean? I don't want to be, you know, banged over the head with this all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's the goal for Rebecca Gold. I mean, you know.
That's Rebecca Gold. My film, The Closet, is the intent is people are people and love is love. It's just people are people. The gay characters in my film, you look at them and you don't know. They're just people.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm striving for. So yeah, I understand completely what you're talking about.
Yeah, completely. Look, Rebecca is a heroine, right?
She's a kick-ass heroine.
She's beautiful, and she's, you know, she's kick-ass sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes. Right? When she has to be.
Exactly. Who is to say she has to look a certain way or act a certain way or tell everyone that she's gay?
Yeah.
It's crap. Which, with TV shows with straight people in, they don't go around saying they're straight all the time.
Exactly.
It makes no sense. So this is the thing. I think that the big mistake that these shows are making when they're introducing gay characters is they keep mentioning that fact that they're gay, and you don't really need to.
No.
You need to fall in love with that character first, and then, you know.
Exactly. And are we not taught show, don't tell? I mean, it's pretty easy to show somebody who's gay. It's just, you know, it's a hug or a kiss or a whatever, and then you just move on.
Exactly.
Like, that's part of their life. They're just, that's who they are. So why are we making this some kind of, you know, golden egg that you must see? Oh, hold this up. It is beautiful. No, you don't. It's part of their everyday life. So let's make it that way.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I've never done that.
Good for you.
And in fact, when I created Rebecca, I decided she was gay. That was the last thought in my mind when I was writing it, until I came to the point where she had to, it was the catalyst for her moving forward, when she discovered that's what you know, that's what she liked.
Yeah.
She was crushing off Jackie. But that's about it. But I never had it in my mind that I was championing, you know, the LGB community, anything like that. And I think if people write with that in mind, I think they're always going to fall. You know, it should be about character, it should be about the adventure, the journey. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's going to, it changes the feel of it. If you're trying to be this champion of them, it just changes the whole feel of everything. It doesn't make it as natural, you know? And that's, well, and I have to say that with Rebecca Gold, and Katie's brilliant at it, it's just part of the story.
Exactly.
It wasn't like this huge revelation. It's like, oh my God, she's gay. No, it was just like, oh, well, she's gay. And now, and that's why she's got this thing with, and then you explain what happened in high school and, you know, the whole, I won't spoil that scene, but it was fantastic. Was it a lacrosse stick or a field hockey stick?
It's a hockey stick. I know Americans and Canadians, you guys have one hockey, but yeah, you call it lacrosse. They call it hockey over here. So, yeah. You know, so, but yeah, I really don't understand what's going on today. We don't even want to go into that because we'll get in trouble. You know,
you know what? If we get in trouble, I get in trouble. What do I care? Shit, man. What can they do to me? They can't shut me down. So,
you know what? Right.
Fuck them.
A fan said, well, she wasn't a fan. She was someone that was on Twitter. And they messaged me and they said, is Katie gay? And I said, and I messaged them back and I said, no.
Yeah.
And then she sent me this really horrible tweet back, which it was private. It wasn't. She said, how dare you get someone, you know, not gay to play this gay character? Why isn't she gay? You know, you're taking two steps back, blah, 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 blah. And then I had to respond. I was not going to respond, but then I responded. God. You know what I said?
Yeah.
I said, do you remember that film, Philadelphia, right, where Tom Hanks, who is not gay, played a gay character, right? And he literally highlighted the AIDS epidemic with that one film, right? His performance, his, you know, the way the film was crafted, right?
Absolutely.
You don't have to be gay to play. No. You know, I can get a gay person to play a straight person. That wouldn't bother me.
No, it wouldn't bother me at all. Well, you shouldn't be able to tell because they're great actors. That's what actors do. Exactly. You know, they want a juicy role like that. Like I don't understand this person being so upset about that.
That doesn't
make any sense to me at all. But, yeah, that doesn't, because really what you're what you've done is you've shown that yes, she's a gay character, but she's like everybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
She has her own shit, and she's trying to be Rebecca Gold, and being gay has not a shitload to do with that. I mean, there's a little storyline that goes through there, right? That with her but it's not her be all end all.
That's right.
She's a person, and this is her shit, man. We're trying to figure her. She's trying to figure out her shit.
That's right.
Oh my God! So that's crazy how people are doing that. That's crazy.
No, it's the times that we live in. Actually, you know, I think that community should be happy that they're being highlighted now. And,
and that's what I'm going to try to do. But again, I'm not highlighting them in a way that puts them on a pedestal or something. I'm trying to show that these are just, like, I have gay friends that you look at and it's not like they have a sign over their head that says I'm gay.
Yeah.
It's just, they're gay, but they're like everybody else. They just want to have love and they want to have happiness and they want to work and, you know, feed their dog and go for a while. Like, that's what the highlight should be. It shouldn't be we're different. It should be that we are the same.
Yeah, I mean, without doing it, right, the crew for and the cast for Rebecca Gold had all kinds of people working with me because, and they were giving people a chance. I mean, if this was a professional production, I probably wouldn't have seen my friend who joined a guy named Ivan. He helped with camera. He's from Iraq.
Wow.
And the girl that comes out of the car, I don't know if you remember that scene where she shoots at Rebecca in the car.
Yes.
She's a woman soldier.
Yes.
She's gay. Okay. You know?
Well, so, I didn't know.
I'm saying it doesn't. Does it matter? No, it doesn't matter. But as I said, there's a lot of emphasis on stuff today, which I find not necessarily.
I'm definitely going to watch Batwoman.
Are you? Good luck.
I think it's Batwoman. Just to see. Well, now I have to see. I have to experience it for myself just to see what they're trying to do. Well, and that should be interesting.
Yeah, they put men down a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, no. That
which, you know, well, when, once you see it, you can't unsee it, unfortunately. But they do. They put men down quite a lot. I don't mind that at all. I don't mind if there's a strong female character, because Rebecca's a strong female character.
But she certainly is.
In Rebecca Gold, I try to balance it out. Right? Yeah. So, so when you watch, I think there's this big trend happening in Hollywood where the women can't be helped by a man anymore. They should not be helped by a man.
Right.
And in Rebecca, I constantly try to balance it out where you've got weak men, got weak girls, got strong girls, you got weak men, because that's how it is in real life.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm not trying to make a statement here, but
but
as I said, majority of films are happening now. It's about diversity, it's about this and it's about that, and I think they should just stick to making a really good film.
Just
cast the right people.
That's a good way to end that segment. Holy crap. that was really good. So one of the things I wanted to ask you're full of tips and tricks. You do some things on set that to help yourself in filming, and maybe if you are, you know, kind enough to share some of those with us, possibly.
I don't know what you want to let's start from the beginning, okay? Right.
Sure.
Let's talk about acting, for instance. Right. Let's talk about how one would direct actors. Okay, so the first thing I always insist on is to have rehearsals. Right?
Okay.
And it's obvious to me and you, but maybe not to the people that are listening or people are just starting out and stuff. You've got to have rehearsals when you have very little money, because having rehearsals saves time on set.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You talk about the character, you rehearse. More or less know where you're standing, you stand up and you rehearse and stuff. Everybody talks about what they like and what they dislike. Script gets changed again through rehearsals and stuff. And then when you get on set, it's merely a formality. You know what you're doing. You don't have to talk to the actors.
Right.
You point and shoot. And that speeds up everything. And on set, because the golden rule, or is it a rule? I don't know, is that time is the enemy. Now, if you're working in a Hollywood situation, it doesn't really matter, because you're talking about millions that's being spent.
Sure.
But when you're spending 20 grand or, or 1 grand or even 20 pence, you really need to move fast, and you really need to know your shit when you're directing a film.
Yeah.
So let's start from, I guess, pre-production. Okay, so let's start from pre-production.
Yeah.
So the first thing you've got to have, in my opinion, this is all just my opinion, okay, right? So people that are hearing this, they disagree. I have no problem with you disagreeing with me at all. People are entitled to their opinions, and that's fine. Okay, right. First thing you have to do is you have to have a really sellable concept.
Sure.
Right? So once you have a sellable concept, but you think it's sellable, or you know it's sellable, then you obviously start writing a screenplay. So let's just jump ahead. You've written a screenplay and you think it's really good.
Yeah.
My advice would be is to not let your friends read it. Don't even let the people that you trust to read your script to give you a good opinion. Don't let them read it. I would suggest that you cough up money and take it to one of the websites where they literally tear your script apart,
right,
and put it back together, because they don't know you,
right
so they're going to give if they're good at their job, they're going to give you an honest opinion of your script. And plus, you know what's really good about it, industrial scripts I really like, because I've used them like 3 times and they're really good. The one thing I like about it is that they actually write you a treatment. They write you a synopsis for every episode. Right?
Really?
They write you a synopsis, right? And then they give you the breakdown of what they think works and what they don't think works. So they've done half the job for you, right? So they've done your episode breakdown.
I hate writing those things.
Yeah, so do I. So that's
I hate them. Oh my God. Okay, that was Industrial Scripts.
Industrial Scripts are really good. I find they're really good. Wow. I did go to one recently. I don't want to mention their name. They were really terrible. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that the person who read the script didn't read it properly, just skimmed through it. Also, another thing is you have to know what an opinion is.
Yeah.
And what, like, for instance, if somebody is reviewing your script and they say, "We don't like that character because he's wearing red shoes." That's just an opinion.
That's an opinion.
Yeah. But if they say, "Wait a moment, that doesn't make any sense. He was in London, then he opens the door and he walks out the door and then he's in Hawaii." Yeah. That makes no sense. Now, that's kind of like a constructive criticism. Yeah,
absolutely.
Just basically, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, just basically. You have to look out for them when somebody's reviewing your script. Like Industrial Scripts is good, but the person that's reviewing season 2, he had a lot of opinions, and it was just his opinions. And you've got to know what an opinion is.
Yeah.
You've got to know what an error is in your script.
Yeah.
All right. Sometimes he says something, and it's his opinion. He says, I don't think this works because you should do this with a character. And you think, nah, that's just his opinion. But sometimes he says something, and you think, that never occurred to you. So that's why it helps when you send it to companies like Industrial Scripts, and because they will tear your script apart, and you'll get really angry when you read it if it's a really bad review.
Oh, yeah.
But then, if you're clever enough, put it away for 5 days, open it up again, calm, read it, and it really will help you.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one tip.
Oh, there
that's
you go.
Yeah.
That's good tips. That's a great idea. Well, listen, I have trusted readers that I go to, but I also try to find if they can recommend somebody that I don't know, but that they trust. And if you don't have the money to send it to a place like, Industrial Scripts or whatever, maybe that's something you can do, is just find somebody you don't know.
I don't recommend that.
No?
Because first of all, it's really hard to get someone to read a script when you really need them to read it.
Yeah,
when it's fresh in your mind, you want it back tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you want it back 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
And you find that people are like, "Oh, I read the script for you 2 months later, but I still haven't read it." Yeah. It's like, I've got this web series called Rebecca Girls. It's on YouTube. Here's a link. Oh, I'll watch it.
And then
5 years later, I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So at least when you pay for something, especially
you're gonna get
that company, you're going to get it, right? And if you want to move forward, because listen, right, we're not getting any younger.
Oh,
every
Christ.
Minute counts, every second counts, every day counts, right? So we need to move. We need to keep moving until we drop.
Yeah.
So you can do that. I mean, other people disagree as well. That's the last thing I'm going to do. After Industrial Scripts has given me my, which they did.
Yeah.
And I've looked at it and stuff, and I've been rewriting and stuff. I'm going to give it to the people I trust. You know what I mean? That's when I'm going to give it to them,
Yeah.
See what they say.
Yeah.
Another thing I just want to touch on very briefly is, remember, right, nobody knows anything, even the people at Industrial Scripts. I'll give an example. You know the magazine Empire?
Yes.
Okay, Empire did this test. They took Chinatown, the screenplay, and they changed all the names in the screenplay, and they changed the title, and they sent it to one of these script reviewers.
No.
Right? And do you know how many times that script got a positive feedback?
Not many.
None. Every script reader that read that script, it just goes to show,
Chinatown,
had problems with that screenplay. Problems that you can never think about.
Holy shit.
So in other words, what I'm trying to say is that, yes, tread carefully, but at the end of the day, it's got to be your decision,
Yeah, well, that's true. You know? That's true. It's your vision, right?
Exactly.
So if they're treading on the vision and they don't understand that, and they've made changes based on their idea of the vision, then you have to be able to recognize that and say, okay, wait a second. No, this is my flag in the sand. This is the vision of the piece. This is where I have to take my stand. And you have to be able to do that, though. You have to be confident enough to be able to do that. And that can be difficult, especially for a new writer or a new filmmaker, to say, well, these are professional people that I've paid. Yeah, but you still have to know you still have to know where you've drawn your line in the sand. This is the vision I have for this piece. You had a vision for Rebecca Gold, and if they're trouncing on that and trying to change that vision, that's a whole different ballgame. We don't want that. We want mistakes. We want things that are glaring, but
You're right. I mean, like, there was one that I said I used one. I normally send it to two.
Yeah.
So I sent it to this one. I said I won't mention their name. They were really terrible. And one review, the actual review that came back said, so how come suddenly they can erase the mind of people? And I was like, did he not? Because they had to watch the YouTube thing. And he said, I wrote back saying, I'm sorry, but your writers missed this. You know, it literally says they literally mentioned the name Procedure.
Right.
You know, and then she talks about, he's going to take my memories away.
Right.
Because that's in episode four. Right. When she kills, what's his name? So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I wrote that. And then the person that wrote back to me said, well, I'm sorry he didn't miss it because it doesn't say in the script or in the, and I'm like, it's there. And I literally sent them the page going, here it is. Right. And they didn't write back. They didn't respond to anything. Right. So in other words, what I'm saying is that at the end of the day, right, when people read scripts, they not only bring their own opinions, but they bring themselves to the opinion of that script.
Yeah.
Right. Their likes, their dislikes, sexuality, their biases, everything to the opinion of your script. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's no lie that Martin Scorsese didn't like Star Wars when he first saw it.
Yeah.
Yet Star Wars was the biggest box office hit.
Yeah.
You know, of for many years.
That's true.
Yeah, and you know, a master like Martin Scorsese hated it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know, so in other words, if you believe in your own stuff,
right,
but you've got to be clear about it. You can't lie to yourself.
Yeah.
Then stick by your guns and move forward.
I really like what you said there. Believe in your own stuff. And that's true. You got to, like, how much of filmmaking is mental, do you think? Like, is it your attitude? It's a lot.
Yeah. Sometimes you listen to someone and they're really negative and it brings you down.
Yeah.
You're clever enough. That would only last you for like a couple of hours, and then you just go screw it and then move forward. To hell with them. Recently, Rebecca Gold was given to a channel over here, another channel.
Yeah.
And they came back saying, we really like it, but it's too much like Killing Eve. I don't know if you know Killing Eve.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I have to.
It's good. They said it's like Killing Eve.
Yeah.
And then I said to the person that told me that, I said, that's a really stupid excuse. And the guy said, no, it's not, because, you know, it's in the same ballpark. And I said, okay, let's use this logic, right? I've just made ER, and I've come, and somebody's come to me saying, I've got this show called House MD.
Yeah.
And I say, no, I'm not going to take it because it's a doctor and it's based in a hospital.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? No. It makes no sense whatsoever, does it?
No, it doesn't.
And then the second excuse is, we're developing something similar. That's when they don't want to know.
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna the only reason why I know this stuff is because through experience.
Yeah.
I've got more than 20 years experience in outside of the business, so to speak. So this is the only reason why I can speak about it, you know.
Well, that's what we like. We like that experience. Because there's so many people who listen to this show who are just getting started, and they would love to hear about that experience. That's the thing I like, is that you're willing to share these experiences that you've had over the 20 years or so that you've been in the biz. So that's important. But what you've been saying about, and I think attitude is like of utmost importance, because it's not just deflecting others' negative attitudes. It's just, you have to be positive on your own.
Yeah.
You have to go into it saying there's going to be blockages, there's going to be roadblocks, there's going to be people who are trying to knock it down, and you just have to constantly rise above and just be, you have to be positive all the time.
Yeah, but also you have to have the knowledge as well.
I give you
another example, right?
Yeah.
So I made a film called The Killing Zone,
mm-hmm.
okay? But first I made a short called The Interrogation, which got implemented into The Killing Zone because it was three stories in The Killing Zone.
Right.
So I made this film as a short film, and I shot it on Super 16, and I had this DOP, and he lit it, and he couldn't do the film. So that's how I met Alan, who I've always worked with.
Right.
So I showed Alan the short film, The Interrogation. I said, look, we're going, this is part of the feature film, and this is what I shot. Isn't it good? And he looked at it, and he went, he went, so they didn't like the back then. I said, didn't like the back of what? And he said, the back of the chair. And I said, because to me, it looked really good.
Yeah.
And so he pointed out all his mistakes, lighting-wise, because he's the DOP.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, while he was saying that, I was like, look at it. It looks great. And you know what? It's because I didn't have the experience to know what was good.
Right.
Right?
Right.
What is good?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the big thing.
Yeah.
Okay? When you're starting off as a filmmaker, you have all these ideas of what looks good and what looks bad, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? But only through experience do you know what is good. Right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So
true.
When Alan did The Killing Zone, you can see a stark difference between the way he lit it and the way this guy lit it for the short.
Right.
And what Alan did was very cinematic, and what the other guy did was very TV.
Yeah.
Right. Now I know what
the difference
should look good. The difference between what... And it's the same thing with acting. It's the same thing with design.
Right.
It's the same thing with editing. It's the same thing right across the board, right?
Right.
If you don't have the experience, right, you're going to have to feel your way, use your instincts to listen to people that know more than you and make a decision.
That's it right there. That's the important step, is that knowing your limitations and then finding the person who is the best that you can get for that particular position. Like a cinematographer is gold, right? I mean, because if you, again, you know the vision, you know what you want to shoot, but they're the ones that can give it to you. And if you don't have the experience, you don't know what's good or bad.
That's
this
right.
is where trust comes in too. You got to trust this person to light it and shoot it the way that you want it and make it look fantastic. So I like what you, oh man. Good piece of advice there, sir. Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. And then that brings us into trust, though, because you have to trust those people. That's really big.
Yeah, you have to trust them. I mean, like, another example is I made this, me and Alan got hired to make this horror film for this Canadian producer.
Yeah.
The film was called Fallen Angels. It was the first big thing I ever did. And he basically said, we can make this film on this amount. And me and Alan was like, it was a lot of money, but he was like, could we? And we realized when everything was done, we set foot on the set, that the producer didn't really have the experience to know what he was talking about. He had all the ego in the world, but he didn't have the experience to know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
So when you're in that situation, what do you do? What do you
do?
Oh
my God.
You know?
Holy crap.
But you know, it got made because we pushed everything and stuff.
Sure.
And I'll just tell you a small example of how little experience he had and what his ego was, right? So basically we're shooting this scene where these actors are in a car.
Yeah.
And they got this low loader to put the car on and drive. Obviously, like, they're driving and a low loader carries the car and you light it, whatever.
Yeah.
So this car's an American car. We're shooting in England, and it's meant to be set in New York.
Right. Right?
So they've got this big Thunderbird car. So the car turns up, and me and Alan look at the car, and we said to the producer, that car is not going to fit on that low loader. And you know what the producer said to us? He said, don't be stupid, you idiots.
Oh, come on.
The low loader is here, and that car's going to fit on, right? So me and Alan threw our hands in the air like we just didn't care. We walked. And we went to the green room, and we just sat there. 3 hours later, came back and he said, do you know what? It can't fit on the low loader. And we were like, right, no apology, no nothing. Right?
Oh, my
so
God.
We went out there, and we did it the old-fashioned way, where we got two people shaking the car. We had a light
Christ.
On there. We had a leaf that went across the window. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. We did it the old-fashioned way. Do you know what I mean?
So, man.
But that's just what I'm talking about. This is like, there is when you're operating from the independent sector, there are so many people in positions of power that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
In fact, in Hollywood, there are so many people. The thing is, though, my point is, try and learn as much as you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you know as much as you can, you can take a step to move forward and do your own stuff.
be a sponge.
Yeah.
Just soak it in, whatever you can.
Don't take anything seriously.
Oh, well, I like that too. Don't take it too seriously.
Don't take it too seriously. Because life is bigger than films. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, family's bigger than films, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You got to know your priorities here, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, those are great pieces of advice, man. I love it. Thank you.
That's all right.
That's brilliant. I love that. Sorry. No, I love what you were talking about. That's awesome. I really so listen, just really quickly, maybe just a piece of advice for a first-time filmmaker. What, you know, one piece of advice that you think a first-time filmmaker could use? What do you think?
Well, it depends what the first-time filmmaker wants to achieve, really.
Right.
I think if you're making your first film, I think you shouldn't really do something that I think you should do something in your comfort zone.
Right.
Right. Fair but enough. Do something that you know you can do, but also have it slightly over the edge so it's a challenge.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a challenge, it really isn't worth time.
Yeah.
You should have a challenge because that will motivate you to move forward. And another thing you should never do as well is you should never get angry on set ever. Or angry on June rehearsals. When I first started out, the first film I ever directed, as you know, is The Killing Zone, and I was really, you know, a tyrant on that thing.
Were you?
And I was really young.
Ooh.
I remember telling Alan, you know, you better get it ready. I was going to take him out and kick his head in and stuff like that. I remember getting really angry and stuff like that. And throughout the years, I realized that that's just not the way.
No.
You know, but you're not going to, if you force someone to do something, you're going to get that kind of a job. But if you encourage someone, so now when I'm on set, I always ask people, how can I help them? I always say to the runner, how can I help you? You know, or the actor, how can I help you? Yeah. You want to do this? How can I help?
That's brilliant because
we're both here to help each other.
Yeah.
We're both here to achieve the end result.
Yeah,
because you know, it's what everybody wants.
You know what?
You choose well.
I've said this on the show many times before, and that is I don't get the people who have these fits of rage and yelling and screaming and swearing at people, and I don't understand how you're going to get the best out of somebody.
I do understand that because sometimes
it's frustration. I get it.
No, it's not for sometimes, right? For me, right? I can only speak in my experience. Sometimes you get someone that doesn't do the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And the only way you can reach them is to literally have a go at them.
Yeah.
But don't have a go at them on set, you take them aside.
Oh, you go aside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always take them aside.
Yeah, you do not let it slide. If you let
then
it's going to be worse for everyone. So you just need to take them aside and look, you know what? You're wasting my time.
Yeah.
Right? If you're here to waste my time, you can leave now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? But see how you said that? You could say it to them like that. You don't have to say, get the fuck out of my, get off my fucking set. Like, you don't have to go that, just calmly, rationally, this is the problem. And if you're not going to contribute, you're going to contribute to a problem. Off you go. You know what I mean?
The problem is that you get people that really do try it on. You really do.
Really?
Get people that try it on. Yeah, you do. And for no reason that you can see.
Wow.
You know, I don't even get that.
I don't even understand why people would do that.
Yeah, well, you know, people are people, right?
So. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well.
And when you get that, how do you deal with it? As I said, the only suggestion I can give is you take them aside, and if they carry on doing what they're doing, you just fire them.
Yeah,
that's all you can
do. Yeah. Oh, and that's fine. You can fire them. Just you don't have to scream and yell about it. Just you're fired. Get off my set.
Depends
thanks for coming.
How they push you, though.
What's that? Yeah.
It depends how they push you. If they push you to a point where you have no alternative but to shout at them, then shout at them.
Yeah.
But that should be the last option.
That should be. That should absolutely positively be the last option.
Last option. Yep.
Last option. Because it affects the whole set.
And
that's
right.
And that's the important reason. Even if you're going to shout at them, get them as far away from the set as possible, and then you can go at them and more.
You want some more hacks?
More. Give me some hacks, man. More hacks. I love it.
Okay, well... if you're shooting with a DSLR, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess one of the things that I learned a long time ago, if you're shooting on a DSLR, is to label your lenses, right? So you got a lens cap, you just get some gaffer tape out, and you write 35, stick on the lens cap. Whatever, because you'd be surprised how many times you're looking at the lens, you go, what was that again? So, I mean, that's just a simple tip. That's just like a...
I like that, though, because I've done that.
Yeah.
I can remember doing that.
Yeah.
Well, what lens is that again?
So it's very simple. You just write what lens they are on the lens cap. And you put, white gaffer tape right on there with a black marker, and you'll know what it is. Basically.
Holy crap. Okay. Yeah. Simple, but effective, ladies and gentlemen.
Another hack is diffusion for lights. So if you're not using proper lighting, you're using lights, and you want some diffusion, just get bloody baking paper. They're really good at diffusion lights. Yeah.
Oh, so like wax paper.
baking paper. Yeah, they diffuse light. Yeah, exactly. So obviously you can't put them on a 4K.
No.
But if you've got small lights, you can put them on there.
Yeah.
And another hack is gels for lights, especially small pieces. You know, remember the dividers in folders where they were like different color ones?
Yeah.
You just get them.
Oh, man. Those are cheap, too.
Yeah, exactly. And some clothes clips. And then you've got some gels, because if you go through Lee Lighting or something like that, they're going to charge you the arm and the leg.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, that's brilliant.
That's freaking brilliant, man. Yeah. When you've got no money, you're like, okay, whatever. So that's another one. What other ones did I learn on sound? When I was doing sound a long time ago, I would make someone talk at the highest level they can, not shouting, but just normally.
Yeah.
And then you'll measure that from there, and then you can adjust the levels so they don't peak. That's another hack.
Oh, wow.
So if they say it as loud as they can, but not shouting, then you'll know not to pass.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of like what you say about rehearsal. It's the same thing. Like if you do this beforehand so that you know at the time that you're recording, you're not going to peak.
Yeah, well, it sometimes doesn't work, but it's a good rule of thumb to do. Now, sometimes sometimes it doesn't work, but you know, it's good. Make sure I said this before. Make sure if you've got a directional mic, point it at their mouth. Don't point it at the head or the floor or the forehead, or just try and get their mouths. Don't understand why people don't understand that. What's such a life, right? It's just weird how people do that, right?
Man, that's awesome.
I don't know what else could I say. Let's talk about directing actors, because it's really hard sometimes to direct actors, because you can't direct every actor the same, right? Because everyone's different, so you have to kind of each actor differently depending on their level of performance. So a lot of actors would say to you, I have to relate to something that happened to me in real life so I can emote that emotion.
Right.
You've heard that, right?
Yep.
That's what a lot of actors say.
Yep, they do.
But, they do say that, right?
Yeah, they do. They do.
But sometimes they use that as an excuse when they can't, produce the goods, basically. I have to emote. Yeah, but you're playing a vampire, what experience have you got as a vampire? In other words, use imagination, that kind of thing. But they don't listen. But I think sometimes when the actor's not doing what I tell them to do, I kind of say to them, I just think that they have to think about, because I remember somebody told me this, a teacher that taught acting. He said, basically, it's all about the head and the body, right? Mm. So you got to think about what's going on in your head, and then the body follows.
Oh.
So the mind is what you need and want, basically. So you've got to think about what the mind needs. It's what you need and want.
Right.
And in life, we think about so many things, but when you're acting, it's not real life. So you have to pick one story and follow that story. For instance, if you're you have to pick one word that expresses what you're doing. Like if you're a boxer and you go in a ring, what's the word? You want to win.
Right.
Right. So that's the word, win.
Right.
So if an actor's trying to find what they're trying to do, you say to them, think about what you're doing, think about what the character's doing, and think about one word that explains what that character is doing.
Oh.
Once you've got that word, then that will get you closer to performing.
Oh.
Yeah? So it's about what they're thinking.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because it does. It may not be just that one word that gets them where they want to be, but at least it gets them in the right direction.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's good, that.
Yeah, it helps, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and if they keep saying the word win, win, win all the time,
yeah,
then it should kind of, you know, permeate inside their head. And
mm-hmm.
And then,
absolutely.
You know,
oh, no, I like that.
Yeah, somebody said to me that viewers don't listen to the words actors say. And it's kind of true, really, when you think about it. They don't really listen to it. But to make the characters work, you have to have the right behavior in your head, right?
Right.
As an actor. So sometimes just by saying that word, win, win, win,
right,
it creates an emotion in your head. You know, like if you say happy.
Right.
You know, if you just literally say the word happy, you will feel a bit happy. If
yeah.
you say the word sad, you'll feel a little bit
right.
sad. So I think it's them finding that word that expresses what they're doing.
Right.
That kind of, it's not going to get them there, but
no.
It's a start, right? It's a start to make them.
But it moves them in the right direction.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a starter.
Yeah, if you can feel it, then we're off to a good start, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be enough to carry the actor through the scene, but as I said, it's a start.
It's a start.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's how I normally start with actors. I always say, you know, pick a word that expresses what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
In that scene. I mean, you know, you can go method and, you know, like Dustin Hoffman run around the building. You know, or you can just act. You can just pick the word. Yeah, that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's how I normally deal with actors, you know.
Yeah.
And also, again, I keep saying you have to know what good acting is and bad acting is.
Right.
If you don't know what good, if you don't have a reference to what good and
right.
bad is.
Right.
Then you're not going to be able to direct them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
Do your research. So, get watch films with great acting, and that'll help.
That sometimes help, but it's like if you watch a film with Robert De Niro in, obviously, you know, if you're in a film and you're a bicycle thief.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
yeah.
You know, you watch.
That's not going to help.
It's not going to help.
Yeah.
It's not going to help, is it?
He's going to try to make more out of that bicycle scene than you really need.
but the thing is, though, the point I'm trying to make is that the audience subconsciously knows. They can't tell you, describe why it's wrong.
Right.
But they subconsciously know what a bad performance and what a good performance
right.
is, you know.
Right.
So you got to be, actors got to be aware of that. So, I do understand they want to go to that place where, you know, they can evoke an emotion.
Yeah.
I sometimes feel that they're doing it wrong, because if they're thinking about, I don't know, say for instance they need to cry and they're thinking about, they're crying because somebody's punched them.
Yeah.
Thinking about their mum that died. It's a completely different emotion, isn't it? It's a completely different situation.
Yeah, yeah.
They're crying. And I think the audience will sense it. So I think they need to think of the word that describes what's happening and then start from there, I think. But anyway, that's just my opinion.
No,
I know.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
No, listen, people can, advice is something that people can use or not. And this is advice that I think is relevant, and it's really up to the audience whether they want to use it or not. I'm taking it in. I'm definitely taking it in. I mean, I've directed actors before, but you can always learn new ways. Like, it's just, that's the thing. There's just, you can always learn. There's always something to learn in filmmaking, and I'm all ears. I'm a sponge.
Another thing about casting as well is, You've got to cast. Casting is the big thing. You've got to cast right.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I was lucky because I wrote Rebecca Dowd for Katie. Yeah. So it was always going to be Katie. And the other people that I cast in my film, I wrote it for them because I knew what they were like. But when you're starting from scratch and you're going to be using actors you never worked before, you have to basically cast right. I'm pretty old school, and I do believe, and people will hate me for saying this, that, you know, people would rather watch good looking actors than people that are just ordinary looking.
Yeah.
So I always go out my way to cast someone that's quite good looking.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I hate the old saying, but sex sells. And people, as I said, people would rather look at someone that's really good looking, whether it's a male or a female, than someone that just looks ordinary. And so you've got to factor that in when you're casting. The hero or the heroine's always got to be mostly good looking, right? Unless there's a point that he's not good looking.
Yeah.
But sometimes I see so many web series, and I saw one where it was about this agent that had this house full of actors, and he's really crap agent, but he was trying to convince all these actors that's living in his house that he can get them work.
Yeah.
And the guy that was cast to play the main character, which was the agent, he was completely wrong. Look of him was completely wrong. Even though he was a really good actor, I didn't go from A to B on that. I couldn't accept that guy being that character, being the hero of that piece, because he just didn't look right.
Yeah.
And then sometimes when something doesn't work, the audience instinctively knows that.
Huh.
And so that's why something doesn't work. Yeah. Or they don't watch it. But when they watch the first episode, they watch a film and they watch 15 minutes of it and then they're off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's really, casting's really, really, I can't stress how important casting is for anyone's film or short. It really is important, because that person has to carry that character all the way through.
Right.
Or mostly through. That's basically what I think. But as I said, a lot of people would disagree with me, but I think it's really important. As I said, if Kate's really good looking, so, you know, people are going to warm to her straight away, right? And then on top of that, it's her character and who she is and stuff like that. And then they warm to her even more.
Yeah, she's a great actor.
And then you got them hooked. Yeah, and then you got them hooked. So it always starts off with that, in my opinion. Hmm. But as I said, it's just my opinion.
Well, like I said, people are going to agree or disagree. They can choose to agree or disagree.
Yeah,
that's all there is to it. I mean, to me, like you said, like if you've got a villain, you might want somebody who looks the part, who may not be so beautiful. And yet, when I think about Loki, and you've got what's his name who plays in that, Cumberbatch. Yeah. I mean, so even a villain is looking fantastic.
Yeah, Hitchcock always had good looking villains, didn't he? He always had good looking villains.
Oh, yeah.
He made a point. Yeah, he made a point of having really good looking villains.
Yeah, he did. That
the audience would trust them. And then obviously he'd be the villain, from Dilem to Murder, straight through to Psycho. Stuff like that. There were some really good looking villains. But
yeah, he was a good true.
Yeah, the point is he cast them, and they were right for those parts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it wasn't, you know, a villain doesn't have to be look ugly all the time.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know, but the cardinal sin is if you cast someone that just doesn't look the role.
Right. Just doesn't look at right. all. Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't. I saw one web series when I was in New Jersey, and it was this guy. He was playing a policeman, and he was this overweight guy. He looked very, very Jewish.
Yeah.
And you can tell that guy wasn't a policeman.
Yeah.
His performance wasn't too bad, but you can tell.
Right.
You would never cast someone like this.
So you just didn't buy in right at the beginning.
Exactly. You just don't buy into it. And then talking about that, it goes right across the board when it comes to set design or, you know, stuff like if that doesn't look right either, it gives it away that you don't have any money.
It shows, doesn't it?
So, yeah. So the best, this is one of the tips. This is one of the hacks, okay, right, for dress setting. Okay. So for instance, okay, I'll give an example. On both Bad Day and Rebecca Gulls, I had two production designers or they're kind of production designers because they didn't design anything, but they brought stuff in. They brought stuff in. You know what I mean, Dan? They look
after the set. I know what but you I mean.
Yeah, so I say to the girl, I say, well, she's sitting on the chair. Rebecca's sitting on the chair. She's sitting on the couch. The background is just a white wall, so we need that dressed.
Right.
So I walk off to deal with stuff, and I turn up, and they're putting stuff here and there and everything. They finish, and they go to me, oh, we're done. And I say, oh, yeah, it looks good. And I say, but you made a mistake. And they go, what mistake did you make? And I said, did you look in the monitor? And they said, no, should we? And I said, of course you should. It makes sense, doesn't it? So I take the girl to the monitor and they're looking, and I said, that is the shot we're doing. There's still a white wall.
Ah.
Fill that frame with something interesting. Balance out that frame.
Yeah.
Right? You just don't have a white wall behind her. You need something behind there.
Yeah.
Then she got it.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna fill the, if you're gonna put stuff in the set, you know, make sure that it has some point.
Right.
Or it fills the frame. There's no point in just having a white background or just a window in the background. You need something to break the color up or the, you know, or the scene up. You know, the root thirds, blah blah blah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
know,
need that, but. The point I'm trying to make is that you have to look at the monitor.
You have to see the shot.
Exactly, you have to see the shot. You can't just put things in there lilly-milly and just like, yeah, we've done it. No, you haven't, because the frame does not see them. So that's another, I don't know what to call that, a hack, but I just call that common sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sometimes on set, common is not very common. on set, basically. Yeah. So that's another thing that I learned as well. As I said, that's one out of a million that I've learned.
Oh man!
Throughout.
Holy crap!
Throughout. Just small things like, you know, if the floor is hard, then, you know, you get the actors to take their shoes off if it's making too much noise.
Right.
You know, just small little things like that. Yep. You know, that people don't realize.
Yeah.
You know, just sense things. You know.
Until they get on set and then they go, "Why is this so noisy?" Well, take the damn shoes off.
Yeah, but then, as I said, if they don't do that and they don't hear it, and then you're in post, you're going to have to redub everybody's voice.
That's true. The, you know, because of all the squeaks and the scuffing and, my God,
that kind of...
See, it's these kinds of things that people need to hear. No, it's truly, because it's little things like this that you forget. You're so worried about the big picture that you're forgetting these little things that are really important. So,
but I'm assuming for you, you're going to be wearing six different hats.
Oh, I'm going to be wearing a lot of different hats. Yeah,
exactly. So the thing is that you've got to, you either got to get to work with someone that you can trust 100%.
Yeah.
You know, to deal with some of those work, those jobs, or you deal with it yourself, and you have to know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Otherwise, things will just run away from you. You know, and that's the thing. So
yeah. Well, I hope to have several people that I can pawn things off on and say, hey, you guys take care of these things so I can take care of this, you know, and we'll see what happens. I've got some good people so far, and I've done some of my my casting, and I'm thrilled with the actors that I have so far, just thrilled. So, but again, once you get on set, some things just kind of slip through the cracks, and it's good to know that, like, you're reminding us of these little things that we should keep in mind, and not just little things, some very big things that we should keep in mind too. So thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Do you have any more?
Yeah, it also applies to the makeup girl. I find the makeup people are the laziest people on set.
Really?
They're incredibly lazy.
Oh.
Incredibly lazy. I mean, you know, you're constantly looking at someone's hair. So say, for instance, you've got an actress with long hair.
Yeah.
And you're constantly looking at their hair, and it's kind of like, it's kind of out of place. And you turn around and the makeup person's sitting on a chair, just staring into space. You're like, why aren't you looking at the monitor? Why are you not looking at the monitor? What is wrong with you?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
You should be looking at the monitor all the time. And I said to her the last time, I mean, I work with a girl named Barbara, and she's brilliant.
Yeah.
And she would always be really scared to go in. And I'd say, do you know what, Barbara? Just ignore me.
Yeah.
If I say action and her hair is out of place, you just run in there. I'm not even going to tell you off. Just tell me to fuck off and just running, right? Because at the end of the day, when you're in the editing suite and you go, oh my God, what's that strand of hair doing?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And that's what the makeup people have got to learn. They've got to look at the monitor all the time to see whether people, whether it be a man or a woman.
Right.
You know.
Absolutely.
And also the, with you know, with cuts and bruises and stuff, they're going to make sure it looks right on screen.
Yeah.
Because it's not good enough to look at your naked eye. You have to see what's on the monitor. You have to see what the audience is going to be looking at.
That's
completely different. That takes me to another point as well, is when you're casting, it's really important to video the casting.
Oh, yeah.
Because they act and they look completely different when you're looking at them with the naked eye, hearing your naked ear. But when you see the recording, it's something completely different. And that's how you judge it. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know that either, which is annoying. So when they cast, you're like, what? You know, that kind of thing. But,
oh, no. But I had them all on camera. Oh, yeah. I taped every single one of them.
I tell you what's really odd. There are two actors that I work with in my life that are complete opposite. Right?
Yeah.
A guy named Robbie G, who was in Snatch, and he's a really good actor. I remember he was in Bad Day.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any rehearsals with him because he was cast at the last moment. He came in and he performed. And you know what? I sat there and I thought it was the worst performance I've ever in my entire life.
Yeah.
And then when I saw the rushes, he was good.
He was good.
It was the other way around with that fella.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
I was thinking, oh my God, I was thinking he does not get the connotations right. He's not saying that right.
Huh.
And then when I saw the rushes, I was like, wait a moment. That's not the person I saw that day. This is completely different.
Yeah.
And that was really weird to me. That was really weird.
That is strange.
Yeah. Very strange. You get some actors like that. You think, wow, you know, they're not good. And then you see them on screen when you see the footage, and you're like, do you know what? They're quite good. So I don't know what they do, but you do get that from time to time, though. Yeah. Wow. Two actors that happen to me.
The opposite. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah, because and of course, as you're seeing them and you're thinking, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, you're constantly trying to direct them to make it better.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the rushes and you're going, wait a second, that wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's weird.
I remember my first big job was, as I said, was Fallen Angels. And I was directing Jeff Fahey. This is the first thing I learned off a really good actor. We directed the scene and I said to him, you're telling the girls this, you're threatening them. And then I go, cut. And he goes, okay. So we do it. And I go, cut. And he walks up to me and he goes, how was that, Ian? And I goes, that was terrific, man.
Yeah.
And he goes to me, I tell you what, Ian, let me do it five times. And I'll give you five different versions for the edit. And I went, oh, that's a really good idea. So I learned that. So, you know, sometimes if you want something, you can ask the actors to do it five different ways. And then in the editing, if you're not sure about something, the way they're saying it, tell them to do it five different ways instead of sticking to what's in your head.
Absolutely.
You never know. You never know. So that was a tip I learned from Jeff Fahey.
Cool. You know what? It's the one thing that I've learned is that you know, especially if you've written the piece, like you've written Rebecca Gold, you know, you kind of got this thing in your head of what you want, and then you get one in the can, and then you say, okay, let's play. Let's see what you guys can give me that's different than what I had in mind. And then you take it into edit, and you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, but 9 times out of 10, you never have the time to do that.
That's the problem.
You're always running against it. Yeah, you're always running against it. But what I would suggest is you schedule in doing a read through at the end of every day just for sound. No matter what, get them to do a read through. That would save you if something bad happens with the sound. I think that's really important, especially when you don't have any money. Important. Yeah.
Yeah, that would save a lot of money.
Yeah, pennies. That'll save you. Well, not pennies, but save you.
Yeah, but it would. If you had some problems with audio, now you've got this backup that you can lean on if you need it. So, that's a really good one too. That's a good one to remember.
That's where you have to be tough on the crew, because all the crew wants to do is go home.
Yeah,
and
you
have to say to them, look, you know, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to stop. We need silence on set. You're going to have to wait. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so you'll get some people complaining and then you'll go, do you know what? I woke up before you. I was here before you.
That's right.
Right, I'm going to leave after you.
Yeah.
So don't give me shit. I said that to one of the actors once. So they get to do their stuff, and then you're kind of saved in post.
Hang on a second. Let me write that one piece down. Don't give me shit.
Don't give me shit. I said it in a nice way, though.
Don't give me shite.
I'll give you shite. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, and I mean, I don't know. As I said, there's 101 tips, but you know, I just think you should just use your instinct when you're making your film.
Yeah.
Just believe in what you're doing. The thing is, though, you're the captain of the ship. You're Captain Kirk, right? So, unfortunately, Captain Kirk died under a rock. Unfortunately, there you go. Such is life.
Thanks for reminding me.
Generations. He died under a rock. Got shot in the back.
Thanks a lot for reminding me.
Yeah.
He's dying under a rock over there.
Yeah. Holy shit. The person you want to be is Spock, though. Because Spock is the coolest.
Oh, but, well, there you go.
But, you know, everybody's looking at you.
Yeah.
Right. You may have a producer on board, and he may be on set a couple of times, but I tell you, everyone from the crew to the actors are looking at you.
Right.
And I tell you what's even worse is when you have your premiere and you have the screening and say you had a performance that's really bad.
Yeah.
Everyone won't be looking at the actor. They'd be looking at you, that's man, right. if it's bad. Fault. So that's why you got to kick ass on set.
Yeah.
You got to make sure those performances are reasonable or good or brilliant.
Well, when you have actors with no name, like no big name actors, I think the performances have to be brilliant. They have to really shine.
I don't think they have to, but I think they just have to be natural, depending on what you're shooting.
Right.
You know, I think when you don't have any money, you cast someone. You cast them because of who they are.
Right.
It's not like casting Julia Roberts and you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
You cast someone that you don't know.
Right.
You've obviously based it on the fact of their screen test.
Right.
So if you cast them, you know what they're like as a person in real life. So the trick is to actually try and get that essence of them.
Right.
Into your film.
Right? Well, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And because, you know, because you like them, and that's why you cast them. You like them.
Yeah.
It's not character that you like, it's them.
Yeah.
Because they're giving another essence to your character in the script.
Yeah.
You know, and it's gonna develop and it's gonna evolve when they start doing the performance, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you like them as a person and you sense they're a nice person, then that's gonna come off the screen to the audience watching.
Right.
Unless they're playing a baddie, of course. but yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And when you're using unknowns, use that, especially when you're paying them. And also sometimes if they're going off the track, yes, you pull them back, but sometimes you kind of let them do what they want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of juggle it a bit.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. You give them a little space
because
you want them to portray them on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of boxing them in.
Right.
Instead of going, I want it this way and it should be this way and blah, blah, blah. You give them a little leeway and stuff. Unless you go way off the track, then you have to pull them in. But 9 times out of 10, they never go way off the track, you know.
Right,
You're trying to steer them to a certain point.
Yeah.
But another thing I should, another bit of advice I should give you is that don't be afraid to really be tough with them as well.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid, because what happens is that actors, they're very fragile, right? And it doesn't matter. You might have the strongest actor on set and he might be really confident, jumping around, laughing around with the crew and stuff, and may really give you a good performance. But say one thing that hurts him.
Yeah.
It's like he doesn't want to know. And that's when you have to be tough with them.
Yeah.
You have to be really tough with them and you have to say, look, you know, this is my film. I'm the director. Do it this way. Right. And if I come to the conclusion that it doesn't work, we'll do it your way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But remember, I'm Kirk.
That's right.
You are red shirt. You're red shirt. I'm Kirk, right? Make sure you don't get shot. Just let me help you not to get shot, right? And so that's the thing. So that and you have to be really tough with them because And also, you have to be tough on the first day.
Yeah, you have right? to establish because yourself.
That's right. Because if you don't, yeah. they will take that rope.
Yeah, they'll take the mickey out of you every time.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to kind of be really tough with them as well. And also, you have to be tough with the crew as well on the first day.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be nice to them, but if they're too slow, you have to tell them they're too slow.
Yeah, you gotta let them know the expectation. This is what I expect on day one, and then this is what we're gonna do, guys. This is the level we need every day, and that makes sense to me. Because if you don't
hire a DOP that has worked in commercials.
Why is that? Yeah.
Because people that work in commercials, DOPs that work in commercials, they are too used to their toys. Oh. So if you're shooting a 30-minute commercial,
yeah,
they're spending millions on it. So yeah. they've got their cranes, they've got their the other. Christ, and if they're in a low-budget film and you say, right, I've only got sticks.
Yeah.
And they're what do I do now? They're not qualified to do something, shoot as fast as that.
Right.
So what you try to do is you try to find someone that's in the middle.
Yeah,
that maybe has done low budget films, but also done commercials as well. So he knows the difference between loads of money and no money.
Exactly.
And so, Alan, for instance, he can light a film with a candle. Wow, that's how good he is, in my opinion. So he's been on big budget films and he's been on low budget films, as you know, he's done Rebecca Gull.
Yeah.
So now, if you look at behind the scenes, we didn't have flags. So he was using a box. There's one shot where he's using a box to flag off, and he was holding it up like that.
That's right. Yeah.
So, I'm not scared to show the audience what we were using. We were using soft lights. We didn't have any, 1K or anything like that. And we didn't have a big light because normally when you're shooting something, you have a one big light.
Yep.
That's the sun. Yep. And you have all the small ones that fill in the gaps.
That's right.
And stuff like that. I mean, I'm not a DLP, but that's how I understand it.
Yeah, yeah.
But we didn't have a big light. So what he did is he had this big white curtain as a, can't remember what he calls it, as a soft light, a huge soft light. I mean, so he kind of fixed it up that way because we didn't have enough money to hire one of those big lights.
Yeah.
So that's insane. So you need someone like that that's kind of well versed in both areas. Big budget to medium sized budget to small budget.
Yeah.
And that's really important because what you don't want is your film to be you're watching the film and there's loads of grain because they whacked up the gain or because the light's not, it hasn't been lit properly or anything like that. So you kind of need that. But saying that, sometimes DLPs can do things that you like, for instance, there was a shot where when we first did the shot where Rebecca's pointing her gun to Hamilton.
Yeah.
At the ending.
Yeah.
By Alan lit it. There was a shadow that went from her nose to the side of her face. And I said to Alan, I don't like that shadow. And he got slightly pissed off. And I said, look, Alan, it looks stupid. It looks crap.
Yeah.
And then he adjusted it and we got rid of that shadow.
Yeah.
So sometimes in your head, you could not want to have that confrontation.
Right.
Right. Because you don't want that confrontation.
Right.
Right. Because you think that you're going to upset someone. And then when you're in the post, you're like, oh my God, I should have had
that confrontation.
You've got to learn how to, if you don't like something, you've got to learn how to say it now.
Yeah.
Don't say it later, but say it right now.
Say it. Yeah.
And you say it right now. And, as long as you've said it, then they should understand you. They will argue. They will compromise. But who cares?
But right? it's all about compromise, is it not? I mean.
Yeah, it is. But when something's wrong and you think it's wrong, you should literally say it. You've
got to say it. You'll regret it if you don't.
I'll tell you the most frightening thing that ever happened to me when I was directing. So, as I said, I got hired to direct Fallen Angels, which was like a big, big, big production.
Right.
And it was the first time I was on a huge production. And I didn't realize this, that the first day, the producer had the whole crew, like 500 strong crew in front of me. And he said, right, now here's the director. And I had to dress 500 people.
Holy shit.
And I was so scared. I was literally shaking.
Oh,
it was
my
like
God.
Me being in front of an audience and I was going to perform.
Wow.
It was really horrible. I've obviously gotten used to it by speaking out to a room full of people.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that a lot of directors don't like doing. Yeah. Sometimes directors don't even like coming out. They stay in there. You know, they look at a monitor and they get there first to do the talking. And I think that's really terrible.
No, you gotta.
You know, I think if you're directing something for the first time, you really have to get used to addressing a whole crowd. And what's better than literally starting with that?
You know, yeah.
I'm full of tips, but I don't want to keep you though. I don't want to keep you.
No, these are great. And as I say, there's some first time filmmakers on here. Most of them are, they're listening and they're absorbing. And you know what? Here's the thing. It's advice. Like, people will either take it or they won't. And it's their problem if they don't or if they do. It's really up to them. But I appreciate all the information.
But to tell everyone that's listening to this, all two of them, just a joke. Don't be scared to fail, right?
Oh,
really,
God, no.
Really, right? Do you know what? It doesn't matter if you fail. If you shoot your film and it doesn't turn out the way you want it, and people say they don't like it, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Try your best to embrace that. Do you know why? Because this is not where you're stopping.
Oh, no.
Your journey is further than this.
No, no, no.
Right? So learn from that.
No, no.
Right? Don't be scared to fail. Fall on your ass and know that this is the process, that you have to fall on your ass 100 times before you can get to a point where you can literally know what you're doing.
Right.
If this is your first time, right, be prepared to fail.
Yep.
But also prepare to succeed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I appreciate that. I appreciate that, because it is a 50-50 chance I'm going to fall on my ass. So,
but the thing is, I can see passion. I can hear the passion in your voice.
Yes.
I can see the passion in your eyes. I don't think you're going to fail. Maybe someone in your crew might fail you.
Yeah.
Like maybe the DLP is not good enough, or one of the actors isn't what you thought they were going to be.
Right.
But I don't think you're going to fail. I think you're gonna do a really good job under the circumstances that you're gonna be in, and nobody can ask for anything more.
Yeah,
you know, as when you've made this film, right?
Yep.
No one on this planet can take it away from you.
No.
It is yours. That's it, right? And no one can say you're not a filmmaker. You know when what's his name? Robert Rodriguez was doing the masterclass,
And
he goes. Do you want to be a film director? Here's a card with your name in it. Now you're a film director. I disagree with that. Okay, right. Yeah, it's nice to think that way and be positive about that.
Sure.
But the only way to feel that you're a director is when you've completed something.
Sure.
And you can stand back and go, you know what? I made this.
Yep.
And I did it off my own back.
Yep.
Right? And nobody can take it away from me. Fuck them all.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
I know it's good. Well, everybody that's watched it knows it's good. The critics hate it, but who gives a shit?
You know
I'm
what?
I'm going on to my next one.
It's funny because, you have to go into it with that attitude that, you know, things could go wrong. Things might go wrong. You have to be prepared for that. And I am. Like, there's always going to be something, right? Because everything I've shot, every short film that I've had, there's always been something.
Yeah.
You gotta, you know, whether it's the weather or, you know, somebody didn't show up or, like, there's always something.
Yeah.
So I have to be prepared for that. But, and as far as critics are concerned, you know what? I don't like to shit on other people's work for one plain reason. They did it.
Yeah.
It's not that easy. Like, I've seen some bad films, and yet I won't go on Twitter and on Facebook or whatever and shit all over the film. Here's why, because they did it. They actually got a film made, and that is so hard to do. And then when they do it and it's good, that's even better. Like Rebecca Gold. Like, you've done it. You've done it, and now it shines. Like, that's something special, man. Seriously. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
No, seriously, because we both know how hard it is.
But this goes back to my first point, which is the concept. You've got to be sure that the concept's going to work for the crowd that you're aiming it for.
Yeah,
because if it doesn't work, then all of this is for nothing.
Yeah, because then you don't have an audience, right?
Exactly. Even though you can turn around and go, I made that, and you can feel proud about it.
Yeah. Who's going to see it?
It's still going to be a bittersweet experience if it doesn't work with the crowd that you're aiming for.
That's right.
So that is one of the most important things, the concept. The concept. Yep. Does the concept sell to the audience that you're aiming
at? That's right. That's right. To a particular audience. You've got to nail that down.
Yeah. That's if you haven't, then you're on your way to nothing. You're on your hiding away to nothing. So basically, so
you're going to make a film that no one's going to see.
Exactly. Well, just like the British industry. So, that's what they do all the time.
Boom. You lowered the boom on them. No, that's great. Listen, this has been fantastic.
That's all. Yep.
You are awesome.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Thanks for coming back and talking to me.
That's all right. Anytime.
That's our show for today, and I can't thank you enough for spending your valuable time with me. I greatly appreciate it. I really hope that you learned something from today's episode, and just as importantly, that you enjoyed it. As always, if you have any comments or questions about the show, please stop by my Facebook page at How They Did It Podcast. I'm on Twitter at HFilmmaking. And on Instagram at How They Did It Filmmaking. Please show your support for the show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back with another show next week. Until then, keep shooting.